City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We are talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Mitchell Fain.
I'm Amy Matheny.
This program is brought to you in part by Broadway in Chicago. For the hottest tickets in town, visit BroadwayInChicago.com. And American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
Surprised, not everything lasts. I've broken my heart so many times I stop keeping track. Talk myself in, I talk myself out. I get all worked up, then I let myself down. I tried so very hard not to lose it. I came up with a million excuses. I thought of every possibility. And I know someday. You'll make me work so we can work to work it out. And I promise you, kid, that I'll get so much more than I get. I just haven't met you.
And you're listening to Windy City Queercast, show number 346. I'm Amy Matheny.
And I'm Mitchell Fain.
And we're in our pajamas.
We are in our pajamas.
We're in our pajamas.
I know, I have your Guthrie mug that was upstairs.
Yep.
Full of coffee. Well, almost full of coffee.
Almost full of coffee. We're having a coffee talk.
We're having a coffee talk. Talk amongst yourselves.
Talk,
you know,
amongst
what's so
yourselves.
Funny? Even when that character first became famous, right? The Linda Richmond.
Yes.
I can't even tell you how much Linda Richmond looked like my grandmother. I'm not kidding you. My maternal grandmother, Bessie, God rest her soul, the fucking funniest lady ever. She had jet black hair that she would wear in that sort of crazy cotton candy sort of swoop. Big rhinestone rimmed glasses with her initials in the corner of the
lens.
In the lens. She wore beaded sweaters
and
slacks.
Slacks.
Yeah, you know how much I hate that word. And, you know, she had long nails. I mean, my grandmother was Linda Richmond. It's so...
That's so funny.
So funny when I...
It struck such a chord.
It struck such a chord because she's real.
Yeah.
She's real.
Yeah. Well, now we have the desperate, you know, the housewives of New Jersey and the housewives of this.
Oh, God, they're so funny.
We're watching the
real... No, my grandmother was so... Yeah, exactly. But my grandmother was more like Linda Richmond in that she was this, like, benign, loving, funny Jewish woman who had no idea how funny she was. She was just sort of stuck in a period and a style.
Yeah.
But so goddamn funny.
It would be funny if we could actually capture people in reality shows that... didn't know they were in a reality show. I mean,
well,
now there's such an uber, it's like so meta reality
now. People are gunning for, you know, people talk about things like, we should have a reality show. Oh my God, we're so funny. They should do a reality show about our office party.
Yeah.
Everybody thinks that they should have a reality show. Let me clue everybody into something. Yeah. Nobody's that fucking interesting, okay?
Yeah.
It's all about editing. You're not that fucking interesting. There's so few people who are that interesting.
You're that interesting.
Well, I don't even know if that's true.
You, Alexander Billings, Steven Rader.
Well, that would be
Coleman Domingo.
That might be
Pierce.
A funny. Yeah, that might be a funny.
The people who are the co-hosts on this show are totally.
Before I walked down here, I realized I got a Facebook from Deb, but I didn't have a chance to return it because I just got it like seconds before I walked downstairs to do this. So if Deb's listening, I love you, Deb, and I'm gonna write you back.
Aww.
Yeah, she's so cute.
She's cute, cute, cute.
Oh my God, she's my lesbian crush. Her and Sarah Gubbins, my lesbian crushes.
Oh my God.
Oh, did I just say that? I did.
You did just say
that's
that.
That's all right.
There you go. You know what's so funny is that, you know, talking about reality stars, my sister-in-law, I'll call her my sister-in-law. It's my cousin's wife, but since I don't have any... my brother's not married, and that's all they wrote. That's all she wrote.
Right. Yeah, I'm the same boat.
My sister-in-law Amanda over Christmas dinner was talking about the fact that she was in Atlanta, and Amanda is very like put together. Like she is a stylish. She's a very stylish girl. What is that song?
Yes, she's a very. You know what that's from? That's
from very stylish
from Breakfast at Tiffany's.
Yes, that's it.
It's Patricia Neal. I'm a very stylish girl.
Yeah, and so. Amanda happened to be at like a girls' weekend in Atlanta with all of her crazy friends, probably from college, that were all in her wedding and stuff. And they were having like this raucous day or whatever. And Amanda saw somebody and ran across to NeNe from Housewives of Atlanta.
Oh.
NeNe? I don't watch it.
I don't either, NeNe. But Anderson Cooper loves her.
Yes. NeNe or whatever. And ran,
Big
you know,
Mo.
Who go check me, boo, or something like that, you know, which is a phrase that everybody's saying around the table. And she goes over and just like is totally gushing all over, you know, this woman from Desperate Housewives, who's kind of like looking down her nose at Amanda and like, who are you? And but was pretty nice to her, but just kind of like with tood, you know. And Amanda then hops back over to all of her like, you know, totally white, bubbly, stylish, probably had a few many martinis.
Debutante friends.
Who all said, why'd you run over to Mary J. Blige?
That's horrible.
Thought it was Mary J. Blige.
That's hilarious.
Isn't that funny? That I is just funny. Think that story is so funny.
Yeah, this whole reality thing. I'm old school in that I like the real world, not anymore, because now it's just about like, I mean, don't get me wrong, they're hot, but now it's just about like really attractive, dumb people who they put together
to make bad choices.
Sex. Make bad choices and get together and have sex. Whereas it started as such an interesting social experiment. Like,
yeah.
I'm sure there's some of us who are old enough to remember the first couple of them, and then of course it was Pedro, but even the first one before that, like the one in New York, when these were young people who had like lives and ambitions, and they didn't know that what reality television was, so they weren't behaving.
They weren't performing.
It wasn't interesting.
Yeah,
it was an interesting social experiment. Not that it was the first one. I mean, I think what was that documentary, the one about that family, the PBS series?
Oh yeah, the. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, and then 28 and Up. That's another episode document. But anyway, I literally hear people, oh, Jordan and I, we went to see, my friend Jordan and I went to a movie yesterday, and we took the Clark Street bus home. And the fucking craziness on the Clark Street bus, I mean, it was like, this guy gets on the bus and he's so clearly loaded.
It's like taxi cab confessions. Yeah. They could do this on a bus.
He's loaded. I mean, he looks like a character. I mean, actually, he was dressed sort of cool, and if he weren't like a drunk, crazy homeless person. Actually, he probably isn't homeless. I don't know. He was dressed sort of cool in a weird way. But sort of too old to be dressed like this.
Street chic.
Street Sergeant Pepper meets...
Ooh.
I don't... Meets Johnny Depp.
Ooh, I'm kind of turned on.
Edward Scissorhands. I don't know. It was bizarre. And then he kept standing up in the bus and announcing to the bus that... he's like, philosophically, when you wake up tomorrow morning, remember... Now, this is in a bus. He's yelling, remember, he's drunk. You are planet Earth. Not that you're on planet Earth.
You are.
Do you understand? You are planet Earth.
Yeah.
It was sort of brilliant. And then, but then these girls.
And then he broke into Sergeant Pepper's Lonely
Hearts. I wish he had. Oh, God, that would have only been so good if he had started to do like Rocky Raccoon or something. Anyway, lovely reader, Mita Maid. No, so then these girls. So he was sort of interesting in a way, and I sort of actually liked him in this weird way. There was lots of craziness going on. People with no socks on. Like, it was freezing. Mm-hmm. And people wearing, like, loafers and no socks. Anyway, just weird, crazy behavior that you wouldn't notice right at first. But then these girls started to comment on the crazy people really loudly in a way that was like, all right, these people are nuts. You don't need to make fun of them publicly. And then what they thought was funny, like their commentary that they were doing really loud so that everybody else on the bus would know how clever they were. Mm-hmm. Was so not clever.
Mm.
It was so the opposite of clever.
Mm-hmm.
And then they said something about like, oh my God, we should have our own reality show where we go around and we comment on. And I thought to myself, no, you shouldn't.
No, you shouldn't.
You aren't even a third as funny as my least funny friend.
I hope
stupid,
I'm not your third funny friend.
No. No. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yes,
like, you
I
know, they're not, I mean, they're what my friend Sheila calls uninhibited. Have you ever heard that story?
Mm.
About... girls in Linkin Park. I mean, there's a neighborhood like this in every city. Like totally like girls who get like dressed up and then they stand outside of clubs like having their cigarettes and they laugh. But they're not laughing because they're having fun. They're laughing so that boys think they're having the best time ever. And Sheila calls
posers.
But they just act like they're having like
that's
the
like that
best
Rufus Wainwright
time.
Song.
Yeah.
Yeah, poses.
So Sheila calls them uninhibited, like, but you can't just say uninhibited. You have to say it like this, like, I guess you need the face to see it too. It's just like this idea that like we are so uninhibited, we just laugh really loud and we party really hard. Anyway, these girls were just inane. I hated them. I'm having a very cynical time.
No, it's funny because Kelly, I got Kelly for Christmas the deep first season DVDs of 30-something. Uh-huh. And we watched the pilot last night.
What do you mean it's on DVD now?
Yes. You'll have to come down 30-something.
You know that I'm obsessed with 30-something.
Okay, here's the thing. We're all obsessed with 30-something, but none of us have seen it in like a decade.
And I haven't. I'll tell you why, because Sheila taped every episode of it.
Oh, so you have it on VHS?
We've been watching on VHS for years.
Okay, well, we were watching the pilot episode last night, which Kelly said she'd never seen. And we're like watching it, and Kelly was like, oh my God, they're really whiny, aren't they? And I was like, I never perceived them. And she was like, well, that was what we always thought, you know. But, you know, after we got into the series, was that they were always whining, they were always complaining. They had irritating voices, almost every one of them. And it was so funny because I said, you know, there was no drama in my life. Like, my household was so level and calm, and nobody showed their emotions. So to watch 30-something was like, I want that.
I know.
That's what I want.
And we were
I
so young,
cry.
Too. We weren't even 30-something.
I know.
I'm past 30-something.
I'm not yet, but I'm brimming.
I loved that show. And, you know, the whole controversial thing with the gay guy.
Oh, yeah.
Who I know because he went to my college.
Yeah.
Peter Frechette.
Yeah, Peter Frechette and...
What's that actor's
name?
The
other guy, three names.
Yes.
Yeah.
He still works all the time.
He directs a lot.
Yeah. I don't know. And, you know, now...
it was such a revolutionary
show. Now Michael, the guy
who
played Michael, Ken Olin directs Brothers and Sisters.
And is on Brothers and Sisters.
Yeah, with his
and
wife.
Patricia Wedding. She talks such a lateral lisp.
Yeah, she does.
So crazy.
And her voice is really set up. Her voice is the whiniest.
Her voice.
Although we used to watch... Okay, when I lived on Wayne Street with Sheila and Kenny, we used to watch repeats of...
If you're born in the 80s and this is totally boring to you, just fast
forward. Oh, no, you have to watch it. It's such a good show. It's a really good show.
No, it's a great show.
And it's been years. It took years for it to come out on...
DVD.
Because of the music rights. That's why.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because it was the first show that it really incorporated like big chill, like... music into the show, and now that we're so used to it now, right? Like all the sort of like hippie chick songs that are on like Grey's Anatomy, 30-something sort of did that first, and so they had all these music rights to work out. So
it's only taken them.
So we used to watch it so seriously. Years. First of all, Chill and Jeremy, my ex, used to do a dance every time we'd come on, dance to the theme song. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So they would dance. And then we would watch it, and then we would all behave at first like we were going to be cynical, and then we'd get so into it that we would start to discuss them. And the pinnacle was when our roommate Kenny was this big, burly, fabulous straight guy who lived in the sort of the bottom of our apartment. It was like a basement to our apartment. And he was this big bear of a just sexy, delightful man. And he came up one day and was sort of being cynical, and then he totally got into it. And then halfway through the show, he's like, very quietly, but very seriously, with no irony, said, "You just know that Hope's breath smells bad."
Oh, no.
He's like, "There's just something a little bit off about her breath."
Oh, no.
Oh, my God. We laughed so hard. And now I can't watch that show without thinking that maybe Hope's breath is a little bit bad.
I'm ruined now.
Anyway, it's I love that show. So you should.
Well, it was
an
event for me. I remember that I had a friend who was much older than me, and I would go over to her house and we would watch it like every week. You know, it was like I had a date.
Oh yeah,
I
need it.
We had a standing date, and we used to watch it. I left and went off to college. It was still on, and I remember that we would. Literally on the phone. This is before cell phones. So I was paying for this shit.
Right.
We would like watch it holding the phone and like, you know, talk throughout it during the commercials. And it's so funny how we.
I know.
It was such an event. It was such event
I remember
television for so many of us.
I won't say it because I don't want to root to people who haven't seen it, but there's a tragedy befalls. It's like season 5 or something like that.
Yep.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yep.
Well, I you know, nobody saw it coming. It wasn't like it was
coming.
So I came home from a rehearsal. And I was living with my sister and brother at the time, which was awesome. And they were like, "Don't talk. We're not going to say anything. Just go in the room. We taped it for you. Just go watch 30-something. And I was like, "What's the matter?" They're like, we don't want to talk about it. Don't watch TV. Don't talk to anyone. Don't get on the phone.
Just go watch it.
And then, I swear to God, I cried for 2 days.
Yeah.
I mean, it was...
No, I was like, I can't believe it.
It was so painful.
It was so painful.
I couldn't believe they did that to us.
It was true.
Oh, my God. So I saw 9.
And that show actually cemented my love affair of cold, distant, sexy redheads. when Patricia Callenber, who eventually was on Sisters, came on. I loved her. She was my favorite.
She was so, Suzanne, it's so funny. She always say like, Suzanne, accept their love. They want to love you. Accept their love.
Well, here's the funny thing was like last night, we were like, we would remember the dog's name, the kid's name and everything. And I said, and they're looking for a babysitter. Who do they eventually hire? Amy. Amy is our babysitter.
That's so funny.
So yeah, we were laughing.
So yeah, I saw Nine. Did you see Nine yet?
I have not seen Nine.
It's interesting today, my friend Sheila.
Everybody was so buzzing about it, and then they ran no ads in the gay papers. They didn't
it's weird,
really
right?
promote it to the gays.
It's and weird because who else is going to go? Because that's who was there.
I don't know. Tell me your thoughts, because well, Richard Knight did not review it for us.
It's so. Ironic. Today is the or this week is the 30th anniversary of All That Jazz, the movie
oh,
All That
yeah.
Jazz, which is a masterpiece.
Brilliant.
But at the time that it came out,
it was probably not.
Not because it seemed so self-indulgent. Who's this guy to make a movie about
yep.
himself?
Yep.
Fellini's already done it with 8.5, which is what Nine is based on.
Right.
Who's this guy? And then he died pretty much exactly as he predicted he would die
yeah.
at Fosse. And so then, in retrospect, we now look and go, what a masterpiece. Well, my friend Sheila did a piece about it on her blog, SheilaMelly.com, where she linked to this incredible story about the influence of that movie.
Yeah.
I bring that up because Nine, while filmed beautifully, it doesn't work.
Yep.
And there's a couple of fatal flaws. Shall I discuss them with you?
Yes, please.
All right, here's the fatal flaw. See, I wonder if Richard, I'd like to talk to Richard and see what he thinks. I love the music. I love the musical,
yeah.
and I've seen the musical on stage.
I just saw
fabulous.
The musical here. Porchlight did it this
yeah.
past year. Great, great.
It's
production.
Great because it's, okay, so it's a musical about this film director who's supposed to be a genius film director who's hit a creative block, and so he calls on the muses or the influences, all these women in his life, his mistress, his wife, his, you know, the...
His mother. The whore that
right,
kind of taught him about sexuality.
Exactly, all that sort of stuff.
The American journalist.
And so we can talk. So it becomes this thing about this brilliant filmmaker. The problem is, if you make a film out of this and then you don't make a brilliant film,
yep.
there's a fatal flaw there. Do you see what I'm
yes,
saying?
Yes, I do.
Because Fosse, to bring it back to All That Jazz, it comes across as Ersatz, All That Jazz. It comes across as like not quite as good a version of All That Jazz, right? But the difference is that Fosse made a masterpiece.
Right.
Fosse was a filmmaker who made a film about a filmmaker making a film, and it was a brilliant film. Rob Marshall has made a decent film that looks too much like Chicago.
Mm.
He's decided that people can only perform if they're in a dream sequence or on stage.
Yep, in black light and then stage light.
And it looks gorgeous, don't get me wrong. It looks gorgeous, and Kate Hudson comes across. They all come across great. Kate Hudson's great.
I was going to ask you, who do you think are...
Penelope Cruz, Kate Hudson, Marianne Cotillard... See how I say it with my accent?
Because Marianne Cotillard.
She comes across great. I mean, everybody comes great. Judi Dench belts out a number. They all come across great. Nicole Kidman, her lips are so overly Botox, it's hard to look at her. No, it is. It's hard to look at her. There's a close-up, and you're like, really? Really? You're going to do that to your lips? You're such a pretty girl.
Yeah.
There's a second fatal flaw. So the big fatal flaw is that you can't make a movie in which you tell us what a genius filmmaker he is and then not make a masterpiece.
Yep.
Because then we're constantly reflecting about whether or not this film is as good as the character would make a film.
Yep.
And it's not. B, Daniel Day-Lewis is a wonderful actor, and his one number is great. You know, he doesn't really have to sing. No,
right.
Nobody who's played that part has really ever been a singer.
Jeff Parker was here.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
But, you know, it was written for Raul Julia, and he's
yeah.
not really a singer. But he plays it so real...
Yep.
That we don't fucking like this guy. And so you're thinking to yourself,
why do all these
even
women
though you're
like
enjoying
him?
Why do all these women like him? Who fucking cares about his existential angst about his art? Who
yep.
cares?
Yeah.
And it's a fatal flaw. The minute it starts, it's this unlikable guy talking about what a genius filmmaker he is, and then you're watching this unlikable guy not make a masterpiece.
Yeah, to me, he has to be. You know, it's funny. It's kind of the thing of, like, Kelly and I were getting caught up on Nip Tuck, and it's
uh-huh.
kind of the Christian Troy thing.
Yeah.
He needs to be so
yes.
lovable.
Yeah, despite the fact that he's
so
horrible.
Horrible.
Yeah.
He needs to be absolutely Machiavellian
yes.
in kind of his...
And this guy isn't.
And his heart cracks open in these Tyler moments where you see it, and every time else, it's like this big child
we just don't
working
care.
So hard.
We just
know?
Don't care about this character, even though Daniel Day-Lewis is working his ass off, which brings me back to All That Jazz. If you haven't seen All That Jazz or re-seen All That Jazz, he's so good, and he's so likable as Joe Gideon, and you so believe, A, that he's Fosse, B... that these women would throw himself at him, and that his, because the work is up there on the screen, right? Mm-hmm. So that it's just, it just doesn't work. It, there's some great numbers. It'll be a great YouTube, like, you know, once it's out on DVD, YouTube, yep, the Kate Hudson number, YouTube the Marianne Cotillard number. But as a film, it doesn't hang, and it's nobody's fault, really.
Yeah.
We just don't like him.
Yeah.
And there's no way to make a film as that's as much of a masterpiece as they talk about a film being.
Yeah, you kind of feel like it should have been like a Johnny Depp type character. It needed to be somebody who has a little twinkle and a little warmth.
Yes.
And they needed to have written some of that in, because
he's not even look sexy. I mean, Daniel Day-Lewis is as sexy as the day is long, but there's all these mentions in the script about how horrible he looks, so he looks horrible. So we don't even know. Like, you know, Kate Hudson throws herself at him. Now, of course, he's supposed to be a famous movie director.
And he's powerful.
He's powerful, a powerful man. But you're like, really? Adorable, sexy Kate Hudson would throw herself at this mess of a man? Yeah. You just don't buy it. And you know, Daniel Day-Lewis is sexy. So it's not like you don't think he's sexy at first. You go in thinking, yeah, it doesn't work.
It's like watching Woody Allen in, like, in his early films. You're like, none of these women would really fall for you. But you're kind of charming and you're kind of smart.
I get it in his early films.
You know?
I get it in his early films. Like, he's not my type because... be like fucking myself, which I've tried to do, by the way. It doesn't work.
And I'm pretty damn limber.
I am pretty damn limber and hung. But no, so that's a different story. I love to say those things to lesbians. But at least his intellect, Woody Allen's intellect and his...
Oh, yeah.
But then he got older and he was still doing that. You know, it's like, really?
Yeah.
Really, dude?
Yeah.
Mira Sorvino's gonna fuck you.
Yeah.
Come on.
But she was so good. She made that work.
So good. So good. So but it was good. Like, I just don't.
She takes us all the way back to Coffee Talk.
Yeah, exactly. Right with that voice. Anyway, so 9, I cannot give it my recommendation, although there are beautiful parts of it.
All right. I'll really wait for it on DVD.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. Maybe I'll go see it in the movie theater.
It's cool to see it in the movie theater just because the numbers themselves are worth seeing, you know? Yeah. It's like, you know, this. It's like the movie of Coraline is absolutely terrible, but the individual numbers are good.
Are kind of great.
Yeah.
Hey, you know what? Richard Eyre Jr. is going to break it all down. Maybe you missed something in 2009. He's going to be bringing us the top GLBT movies of the year, kind of a retrospective. What did you miss seeing and definitely want to make sure you see on DVD or run to the theaters and still catch? And also, Kirk Williamson and I have some big news. Mexico City is not the only big news story. There are others. And I'll be telling you what's going on in the theater scene as well. And then we'll be back here in our coffee clutch with Mitchell on the couch.
Hi, I'm a Miller Lite brewmaster.
Yeah, and I'm a Miller Lite drinkmaster.
It's the Brewmaster Drinkmaster Show.
I just created a revolutionary aluminum pint bottle. Great new way to enjoy the taste of Miller Lite.
Wow. See, I just designed a new game day delicacy to be enjoyed with your great tasting beer, the 8-layer dip.
Well, the aluminum pint has a wider mouth, giving every sip a superior flow that delivers the great taste.
That's terrific. Most people flow from beef to bean to sour cream to cheese to guacamole to salsa to veggies. See, I'm not most people, though. I flow all the way to jambalaya.
Huh. Also, it's got a resealable cap that makes sure every sip tastes as fresh as the first.
Well, my dip is so hearty, it can last from a day game to a night game.
This isn't a competition, you know.
Okay, fine. You advance the science of drinking great-tasting beer, and I advance the art of enjoying it.
Introducing the new aluminum pint bottle from Miller Lite. Just another way for you to enjoy the great taste. Miller Lite. Great taste, less filling. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Live responsibly.
I'm Kirk Williamson.
I'm Amy Matheny.
And this is The Week in News.
Pride at Work, the GLBT constituency group of organized labor, named longtime GLBT labor activist Peggy Shorey as its new executive director. Shorey succeeds Jeremy Bishop, who resigned to join the Obama administration in the U.S. Department of Labor.
The Iowa Family Policy Council is continuing to urge state lawmakers to support a constitutional ban on same-sex marriage. The group is asking 150 legislators about their stances on a ballot measure similar to California's Proposition 8 and Maine's Question 1, which both denied gay and lesbian couples a right to marry. If the legislature does not act on such an initiative next year, the earliest the measure could be voted on by the public would be 2013. Same-sex marriage in Iowa became legal on April 27th of 2009.
Vermont State Rep. Rick Hube, one of 5 Republicans to vote for same-sex marriage, recently died at the age of 62. Hugh, who had lost approximately 100 pounds within the last year, suffered an aortic aneurysm while walking.
In New York, lesbian attorney Julie Camps is suing her firm, Fried, Frank, Harris, Shriver, and Jacobson, for $50 million, claiming repulsive harassment and discrimination because of her sexual orientation. Camps, who typically wears men's suits, says that at least one partner at the firm wrote gay bashing and damaging comments about her. Camps, who wants to be rehired as a partner, resides in California with her wife.
Michigan's Department of Corrections will investigate its own affiliation with the ex-gay ministry Corduroy Stone. The department, which has expelled white supremacist groups and the Nation of Islam for making racist comments, explicitly bans discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity.
In Ohio, a closeted lesbian has sued Netflix, claiming that data the movie rental site has published can out her and is an invasion of privacy. According to the suit, researchers from the University of Texas once used Netflix data to identify customers by comparing anonymous reviews to ones posted on the Internet Movie Database and made educated guesses about the customer's sexual orientation, a process called the Brokeback Mountain Factor.
In Michigan, Benton Harbor's GLBT community is rallying behind a man after he was reportedly gay-bashed. The incident, in which the victim was reportedly subjected to anti-gay slurs and was beaten, was the second in 3 weeks reported to OutCenter, the county's GLBT community center.
The South Carolina LGBT nonprofit group, the Alliance for Full Acceptance, has once again sponsored Operation Shoebox, a national project that sends gifts and items, such as snacks, toiletries, magazines, and DVDs to troops in Iraq and Afghanistan. Operation Shoebox has been running since 2003.
In Puerto Rico, officials are investigating the murder of a man at Ponce's Las Colinas Motel as a possible hate crime. The victim was reportedly stabbed 20 times. This could be the second hate crime in the Commonwealth in less than 2 months, following the brutal murder of Jorge Steven Lopez Mercado.
In world news, the Parliament of Lithuania has decided to take out anti-gay language from a law that restricts information made available to children. Originally, the law banned information that agitates for homosexual, bisexual, and polygamous relations, along with images of sex and death, as well as foul language and data on the paranormal. Now, the law bars information that encourages the sexual abuse of minors, sexual relations between minors, and other sexual relations.
In Australia, a dad is accused of forcing his 14-year-old son to have sex with a prostitute because he thought the boy might be gay. The father will now stand trial for the rape of the son.
Mexico City lawmakers approved same-sex marriage on December 20th, making it the first measure of its kind passed in Latin America. The new measure modified a civil union statute already in Mexico City. The new law alters the meaning of marriage from a free union between a man and a woman to a free union between two people.
India has hosted its first transsexual beauty pageant for the title of Miss India. The pageant, which featured contestants aged 20 to 35, took place in the city of Chennai.
Police officer Mark Carter, crowned Mr. Gay UK in 2006, has been arrested in connection with allegedly committing a sex-based attack. Carter, who has been suspended, has been with the Huddersfield Police since 2005.
And in entertainment news, Lady Gaga told MTV that her favorite artists of 2009 were her fans. Every song I did, they remade on their own, and every photograph that I took, they took their own version of it. As for album of the year, she selected Morrissey's Years of Refusal. Her choice of song was Grace Jones' Corporate Cannibal. Adam Lambert named the Black Eyed Peas' Boom Boom Pow, Lady Gaga's Bad Romance, and Pink's Sober. Lambert named Lady Gaga as Woman of the Year and her CD The Fame as Album of the Year.
Political conservatives are upset over Christmas tree ornaments at the White House that feature people such as drag queen Hedda Lettuce and the late Chinese communist dictator Mao Zedong. Simon Doonan, the out creative director of Barney's department store in New York, supervised the decorations. Right-wing website Big Government said Doonan has been behind displays showing former British Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher as a dowdy dominatrix and ex-VP Dan Quayle as a ventriloquist dummy.
Longtime couple Susan Sarandon and Tim Robbins have split. The two, known for their liberal political leanings, were together for more than 2 decades. They met on the set of Bull Durham, but never married.
Singer Ricky Martin is condemning anti-gay hate crimes. In the Puerto Rican newspaper El Nuevo Día, Martin criticized recent anti-gay murders and urged people to accept diversity. Martin is from Puerto Rico, the site of the November killing of gay teen Jorge Steven Lopez Mercado. And that's the weekend news brought to you by Windy City Times.
Richard Knight Jr., and here's your Night at the Movies Minute. Well, this is going to be minutes, because it's time for my annual list of the top 10 best GLBT movies of the year. Here they are in my preferential order. Number 10, Hannah Freed. Sharon Gless makes her feature debut in the title role about the decades-long up-and-down romance between a free spirit and her more cautious lover, who ironically end up down the hall from each other in a nursing home at the end of their days. Number 9, Little Ashes. Twilight star Robert Pattinson and newcomer Spanish hottie Javier Beltran play the young painter Salvador Dali and writer-activist Gabriel Garces, I can't say his name, who have an intense romance during their school days in this old-fashioned, gorgeously mounted mood piece. Number 8, Grey Gardens. From Out, co-writer-director Michael Soucy, made for HBO, career-altering performances by Drew Barrymore, Emmy Award-winning performance by Jessica Lange, and a great performance by Malcolm Goetz as the gay pianist for Big Edie. Should have been released in theaters. Number 7, Taking Woodstock. Oscar-winning Brokeback Mountain director Ang Lee returned to queer characters with this endearing based on a true story set in the sleeping hamlet that made history the weekend of the Woodstock Festival in 1969. Dimitri Martin, the comedian, plays the title role, a young man who comes out sexually, emotionally, etc. in the course of the making of the, in the course of the film. It should have done better in theaters. I love this movie. It's on DVD. Number 6, Every Little Step. Adam Del Deo and James D. Stern's fascinating and entertaining documentary about the history of Broadway's A Chorus Line as a revival is being cast includes a biography of the gay talent behind the scenes, most tellingly its brilliant director choreographer, the late Michael Bennett. That's great. See it. Number 5, Bruno. Opinions about Sacha Baron Cohen's Austrian fashionista character Bruno and his shock-inducing stunts was mixed with both straight and gay audiences. Is Bruno too stereotypical to score points from the homophobes he encounters, or just the opposite? I'm in the latter camp. I really liked it. Number 4, Outrage. Oscar-nominated documentarian Kirby Dick goes after closeted conservatives in Washington politics with a track record of voting against our people. No, no, no. For about 10 seconds after its release, the conservative media helped it gain traction, while the mainstream media once again ignored its eye-opening claims. It arrives on DVD in January. Number 3, Precious, based on the novel Pushed by Sapphire. Bisexual author Sapphire's novel about a second-time pregnant 16-year-old obese African-American teenager in Harlem in 1987 is compellingly brought to the screen by self-described part homo, part Euro, part ghetto director-producer Lee Daniels. Paula Patton plays Miss Rain, the firm but loving teacher who helps Precious spread her wings and just happens to be a lesbian. Number 2, Valentino, the Last Emperor. Vanity Fair correspondent turned film director Matt Turnauer's entertaining and deeply observed documentary debut about the last collection of Italian couture icon Valentino and his business-slash-life partner Giancarlo Giametti. It's so fabulous. And Oprah loved it. Number 1, drumroll please. Finally, A Single Man. Based on iconic queer writer Christopher Isherwood's 1964 novel, Colin Firth, Julianne Moore, Matthew Good, and Nicholas Holt look and act sensationally in this stylish and moving retro drama about a college professor coping with the death of his lover. Co-written, directed, produced, and self-financed by clothing designer turned film director Tom Ford. I'm Richard Knight Jr. That's your top 10 GLBT movies for 2009, and that's your Night at the Movies half hour. Happy New Year.
Ladies and gentlemen, live on stage at the Cadillac Palace Theater, it's the sensational new production of the hit musical, Dreamgirls.
We are Dreamgirls, the boys who make you happy.
Take an unforgettable journey with the dreams as they try to make their way to the top. It's the one musical that has it all. The backstage drama, the onstage glamour, and all the songs you love from stage and screen. Listen to the music, feel the joy, catch the dream. If you only have one night to see a Broadway musical, see the all-new, spectacular Dreamgirls.
I've got one night only, my
Coming soon to the Cadillac Palace Theater, January 19th through 31st. For tickets, call 1-800-775-2000 or visit BroadwayInChicago.com.
Culture Club. Culture Club. Culture Club. Theater.
Music.
Dance.
Art.
Performance.
Provocative.
Hilarious.
Exciting.
Weird.
Innovative.
Campy.
Edgy.
Original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of December 28th, 2009, you are in Chicago's Culture Club. You're invited to a marvelous party. Writers Theater presents the musical comedy review, Oh Coward. Acclaimed director Jim Corti brings Noel Coward's effervescent music, quips, and wit to life. Be transported to a 1930s nightclub for a must-see evening of the most memorable tunes of the 20th century. Tickets are selling quickly. Order yours today at writerstheater.org.
Sharon Isbin, the guitarist recently featured in concert at the Obama's White House, and violinist Mark O'Connor will perform at the Harris in Millennium Park on March 6th. This singular program will include selections from their 2010 Grammy-nominated album, Journey to the New World, Amazon's number one selling classical album of the year. Don't miss your opportunity to hear this sublime concert pairing. Sharon Isbin and Mark O'Connor. Tickets start at just $45. Visit harristheaterchicago.org today.
Million Dollar Quartet is a hit, raves the Chicago Tribune. On December 4th, 1956, Johnny Cash, Jerry Lee Lewis, Carl Perkins, and Elvis Presley played together for the first and only time. Relive that night with the new rock and roll musical. For tickets to Million Dollar Quartet, visit Ticketmaster.com. Now extended through March 28th at the Apollo Theater. And for more Culture Club, visit WindyCityTimes.com.
Hello, this is Pearman speaking. Fasten your seatbelts, frequent flyers. You're flying the Windy City Queercast.
Sitting here on this lonely dock, watch the rain play on the ocean top. All the things I feel I need to say, I can't explain in any other way. I need to be bold, need to jump in the cold water, need to grow older with a girl like you. Finally see you and naturally the one to make it so easy when you show me the truth. Yeah.
So Mitchell, we're looking ahead. We're into 2010.
Can you believe it's already been a decade?
That's what I was just thinking, that like we're entering a new decade, and
this decade started so badly for me.
Yeah,
I was so not that anybody cares. But this is not my therapy session, but I was depressed.
Yeah.
At the beginning of this decade, and I have had 2009 was a kick-ass year for me.
Yeah,
I had a really great year.
Yeah.
Past couple of years, as a matter of fact, ever since I moved in here, I'm not kidding. Like it's changed. There's something about this magic in this place, the magic in my little apartment upstairs, which we have now called the Nook. You know,
the Nook.
Do you know what we call it? The Nook.
No.
Club Nook.
The Mill. The mother-in-law.
Yeah, Club Nook, and I don't know. It's just been so. 2009 has been a great year. I've had great work. I feel like I've done great work. I've made.
You have.
I've deepened friendships. I've made new friendships.
Mm-hmm.
I've taken on lovers.
Mm-hmm.
I've discarded others. Yes, in many countries, I've discarded others.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. This has been a good. I've had a good year. I mean, I'm almost like a Pollyanna because usually I'm like the cynical bastard. But
you are. I love this.
I have
a whole new side heading into the new
decade. This has been a really good year, and I'm really looking forward. I have a lot of really fun stuff planned already for the next year.
It's funny when you think about the millennium, because, you know, 10 years ago, that would have been like...
I know, my nephew was born.
Everybody worried about Y2K, everybody, what was going to happen when the clock ticked over. I was in a different relationship. Was I in a different job?
You were a different house.
I was in a different house. I was in a different job, I believe. I was still doing radio, but I don't know that.
You had a penis?
I had a penis.
Remember that?
Yes, I do remember that. Many in a drawer. different
sex
colors.
Sex toys.
Woo, woo. You know, Alexander Billings lived here.
Mm-hmm. She did. She lived in town. I lived with her.
Yeah, you lived with her. Now you live with me. Yeah. She had a penis once. I had. I then she didn't. Then I did.
I have to live. I know now you have one.
I
have
I
to live with. Now I don't know where mine is. I think I left it
not
on the Clark Street bus.
Dishwasher. The dishwasher lady is always the best. Top drawer though. Top shelf.
Top shelf.
Top rack. But it is weird to think about like where
so
I was.
Fast.
It's weird because the beginning of 2010 to me was a little bit of like a new beginning. A lot of things were
of
new
the 2000.
For me. Yeah, the new millennium was a new beginning for me. I would think I was venturing into kind of working for a new company, which would be this company. I was in a new relationship. I was in a new apartment. There was a lot of new for me, you know. And it is interesting to think of, you know, there is some new coming that I know about in 2010, but just what I'm getting. I don't know, some ease about is just some of the things that are really feel really grounded and really settled in my life. And I don't know, that feels new because
yeah.
I've always been a bit of a, not in much ease in my life.
I think that's an age too thing.
Maybe it is an age
thing. I mean, not that you're old, but I mean, I'm older than you, but like, you know, hitting my 40s, you know, I just turned 43. I don't know. I think it is an easy. I freak out less about mm-hmm. stuff. And like this year is starting, and my show closes on the 2nd, and then I'm going to New York for like 11 days.
Nice.
I'm actually going to go to New York, and Rhode Island, and mm-hmm. New Jersey.
Yeah.
And then I start working for Looking Glass, and then I go away with Second City again, and then like. It's.
Where are you going with Second City this time? Do you know?
Your Alaska.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I'm going to go to Alaska.
Lots of lesbians up there. You'll have other crushes besides Deb and Sarah. It will happen while whale watching
love
in
them.
Alaska.
Yeah, so we port out of Seattle and go to Alaska. So it's like week-long cruises out of Seattle to Alaska. So I'm really excited about
yeah.
that. I've never been.
I'm going to come visit you.
You have to. You have
when
to.
When are you in there in March?
May.
May.
I'm not going till May. May till September.
Oh, nice. All summer.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, so it should be lovely.
Yeah.
I'll be out of here when it's super, super duper hot.
Yeah.
And on the ocean, you know. But I am looking forward to 2010 just because I feel like I'm in a good place. I have some work set up. I can really enjoy my life. I love mm-hmm. where I live. I love, I don't know. It feels nice to feel good about myself at the top of a decade.
Yeah.
You know.
How do we feel as, you know, we're going to hopefully get our predictions here early in the year from Ms. Cleo, who will annually tell us what her forecast for the new year is. But what do you think is kind of in front of us as gay and lesbian, bisexual and transgender people? You know, many people have said that Obama is going to absolutely kind of disappear from us in this next year.
He is... I've been saying it.
Based on the re-election.
If you go back to our other podcast from the past year or so, I've always said it. He is not an ally. He has said it. He's not for gay marriage. He may have gay friends, but you know,
yeah.
Who cares?
And yet, isn't he the most gay-friendly president we've had in putting in the Matthew Shepard hate crimes bill? I mean, do we still just kind of take the chum on the bottom of the...
Yes, we do. We're the group, I've said it a million times, we're the group that it's still easy to kick under the bus, and he's going to kick us under the bus. So I'm not surprised. So I'm not disappointed. I do.
So what do we do on a local level, then? If we don't look for it to be him, do we think...
Come out.
Yeah.
Everybody has to come out. It's still this thing. I mean, it's still amazing to me. How many people are not? I mean, I get it, but you just got to get some balls. And you know what's interesting? I'll tell you, this is my prediction for the next decade.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be the un-Oprah decade.
The un-Oprah decade, but it's going to be
the next generation decade.
When I meet, you know, because I work with a lot of young people being in the mm-hmm. circus and stuff, and straight and gay.
Mm-hmm.
And the young people that I meet mm-hmm. are so less concerned mm-hmm. about gay straight distinctions. Not that they blur the lines and have sex, and in fact they don't. They, you know, I have so
many.
But
these are the '90s generation,
right? And while they're growing up now,
yeah,
and they're so growing up.
This is the Clinton generation, I guess.
And these kids, we have to let these kids. We may not get it because we're at that age now.
Yeah,
people who are listening, well, we don't get it.
Yep.
We don't get it. We're stuck in our ways. We think about our 401ks and our summer house in Michigan. Boring. Can I make an aside? I never want to talk about your summer house in Michigan ever. Ever. Do you understand? Dude chatting me up at a bar. Ever. I find it fucking boring. I'm sure it's lovely. Take me there. I don't want to talk about it. Anyway, fucking boring. Let the next generation do what they do. And it may not make sense to us, and it may not seem attractive to us, and we may not like their music, and we may not.
Yeah.
But it's theirs. And they're ready, and they're fucking fabulous.
Yeah.
That's my prediction. They're going to take over, and they're going to change things for us.
Yeah.
They're going to change things for us because of how much they accept themselves.
Yep.
My generation, is still carrying all this self-hatred.
Well, we
around.
Still have a foot in each.
Yes.
We're supposed to be all totally comfortable with both feet being over in acceptance, and we have self-loathing, or we have self-doubt, or we have that lower second-class citizen feeling.
Yes. I say let these kids take over, gay and straight, because our young straight allies, when I think of my friends, young straight friends who are dear, dear friends who couldn't give a shit about someone's sexuality.
Yeah.
They just want to know, are you cool? Are you smart? Are you talented? Are you like fun to hang out with? Are you like progressive? Are you, you know, they couldn't care less.
Yeah.
You know? And it's not like that, even just before them, there was a generation where it was cool to have gay friends. They're even past that.
Yeah.
It's not interesting to them. It's like, are you a cool person?
Yeah.
Right? And so I think my prediction is we have to let the kids take over.
Yeah. The problem is that we are living longer, and that stalwart conservative stem from which I come from in the South.
I do too. Listen, I come from a blue collar mafia town.
Yeah. So, you know, that is really like pressure cooking. It's like pushing the lid on it, and they're living longer, and they're staying
and
in
they're
power
resisting
longer,
harder
and they're
and
resisting
harder.
Harder and harder.
Yes.
And I mean, I'm all for them hearing you, but I think, you know, in some ways that we live in this unique little liberal bubble called the gay community in Chicago, and, you know, one of the bluest states, you know, in the U.S. And, you know, we get really naive about what it's like in other parts of the, you know, the U.S. and definitely naive to how dire some of that push that the younger generation wants. You know, how dire some of the consequences are in other countries. And I think it's going to be a great war. I really think it's going
to be
a great cultural war.
I say look out for these kids and support them. And I
think we're going to have another radical movement.
I think they're ready for it.
Yeah, I think they are too. But I'm just saying there are going to be casualties in that. And there's going to be casualties in the trans movement. There's going to be casualties in independence being sought and the protections being sought in other countries. And we're already seeing some of those happen.
Yeah, a couple just got married in Argentina.
Mm-hmm.
Did you hear about that?
Mm-mm.
First gay marriage in Latin America.
Oh, Argentina.
Happened like yesterday or something like that.
Yeah, you know, and I think it's just going to be really, really, really interesting. And it's going to be interesting too for the HIV/AIDS community, you know, with the older generation now aging to such a point that they're, you know, dying of being older men and women, you know, maybe not of HIV/AIDS anymore, but this younger generation who is not for, you know, that is not their fight. And, you know, whose fight is that going to become? I mean, now that's maybe become a little bit more of a administrative an international fight. But, you know, nothing is like the passion of the people. And so that makes it's fantastic. There have been some great AIDS leaders to come to the forefront, Bill Clinton and Bono and Nelson Mandela. And
oddly enough,
people. George Bush
has the best record on AIDS policy of any recent president.
Yeah.
And in fact, Obama's reversing it.
Well, there you go.
Is that amazing?
Weird.
What a fucked up fact that is.
Yep.
Bush has one of the best records on funding for AIDS. And Obama is turning it around.
Yeah. What's that about?
I think he's overwhelmed. I'm sure he's a nice guy. I'm sure he's a nice guy. I'm not sold on the guy.
Yeah. We just like Michelle's
fashion
guns.
Sense. Yeah.
We like her guns. Well,
and their darling daughters.
It is going to be a very interesting decade. Very excited to be starting it with you.
I know, me too.
I hope that you and I are somehow webcasting or whatever we call that in a decade.
I know, whatever we call it, right?
Yeah, to kind of go.
Mind melding.
Here's where we are. But, yeah, interesting moments. And we will look ahead with Ms. Cleo, I hope, in the upcoming show so that we can tell you more about her predictions, many of which she usually lands on the money. So that will be very, very interesting.
I'm in it.
So next time we talk, it'll be 2010.
Wowie.
We'll feel different.
We will feel different.
We'll still be gay.
Speak for yourself. No, I'm totally. I'm so gay.
You're so gay. Go get the thing out of the dishwasher.
Thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. This program is brought to you in part by Broadway in Chicago. For the hottest tickets in town, visit BroadwayInChicago.com. And American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow. Special thanks to our Queercast family, Kirk Williamson, newscaster, and Di Sturkey, production editor. I'm Amy Matheny, your host. Please comment on our shows at WindyCityQueercast.com and iTunes. The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it. Subscribe today. Windy City Queercast, queer and now.